It's Brad Slitt, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio. And today, I'm heading up north to Jeff's neck of the woods, so to speak, right? So we can conduct this phone interview and try and keep people informed on what's going on with neck of the woods. How you doing, Jeff?
Not so bad, my friend. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I've been running around nonstop and just got home in time to get this set up.
Well, thanks for taking the time, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Well, this was the priority today, but, you know, when you have kids, sometimes other things come up. But
yeah, I imagine.
But so how's everyone been coping with the coronavirus lockdown there? You're up in Canada, right? What part again?
Well, we're in Vancouver, British Columbia, so far west coast, right on the water there.
Oh, okay. And how you guys been coping with everything?
Well, personally, totally fine. It's not too bad. A few of us have been laid off due to the heavy lockdown, but it's not the worst thing in the world. The Canadian government's doing a pretty good job of supporting everybody. We're all living pretty comfortably, happily, and healthily under the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit that was doled out right away. But band-wise, we're doing okay. It was a little disappointing to release a record and then have all of our everything canceled all at once, you know, all in one fell swoop. But aside from releasing the record and not being able to tour, we're doing okay.
Yeah. I mean, it just... You just wanted to support that, and now the tour is kind of, so any kind of promotion is, I guess, good promotion to get people to check out the album, huh?
Yeah, for sure. It's been a challenge. We had we're a DIY focused band. I personally do most of everything for the band myself in terms of advertising, tour booking. I design all of our merch. I do all of our artwork and all that kind of stuff. And had a pretty lofty, our best year yet lined up to support this release, including a couple tours that were going to be supporting some major acts, including a couple festival appearances that we were really excited about, and including like South by Southwest and a few others that actually didn't get announced before they got canceled, which was a bit of a bummer. But it's been a struggle to kind of keep our head above water in terms of promotion. It's kind of tough to release a record and then not do anything. So,
exactly.
We're trying to be creative, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, probably already, you know, working on the next one with the downtime, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got nothing but time right now. That said, everyone's kind of in the same boat, you know? It's not like it's harder on us than anybody else. It sucks for everyone. Every band out there is struggling to... you know, find new ways to engage listeners from the comfort of their own home. And that can be especially tricky when you want to play pummeling death metal.
Exactly. Oh, man. So, are you guys all basically in the same area? Have you been able to kind of get together? And
so I'm Jeff, I do the vocals, and then our guitarist, Dave, who's, he's kind of like my right-hand man in the operations of the band. He and I live a couple blocks away from each other, so we're quite close, and we're quite close friends as well. So I see Dave every now and again, usually like once a week. We'll get together and have a socially distanced beer in the park or something like that. But a couple of the guys live in suburbs of Vancouver, so just outside. We have yet to jam, actually. We played our last show on March 10th. And we're scheduled to fly to Austin, Texas 3 days later. And unfortunately, we had all of our stuff packed up and ready to fly. But when that one got shut down, we haven't jammed all together since then. And that's because two of our guys got sick like immediately, which was unfortunate. They work in construction and longshore, so like managing the ports here in Vancouver. So naturally they come in contact with a ton of people. They didn't contract COVID, but they just got really sick. So they did a proper quarantine. So we actually haven't spent any time in a room together in the last little while, which is kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But, we're fortunate enough to be able to, like, we've been writing using a couple programs like Reaper and whatnot. Like our guitarist Dave will record some riffs, send them to us. Our drummer will go to the jam space by himself, record himself playing some drums. They'll kind of mash it together. So we've been doing some pre-production for new material that way. And then, you know, we hang out and have Skype chats all the time just because we're buddies and it's hard to not hang out with each other, you know?
Oh, exactly. And then, I mean, with technology today, you guys can still share. It's like recording together, but not, but, you know, nothing's like the real thing, you know?
Totally. Yeah. It's never as fun as the raw energy that you get from being in the room, standing beside somebody playing a guitar that sounds like a machine gun at like full volume. It's a little less impactful through a computer monitor, but it's, you know, it's still good to do and it still is satisfying to all of us. So we're trying to keep productive during this time.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing you guys didn't have your stuff all packed up and sent out to Texas and then get told you couldn't, you know.
Yeah, that would have been a bit of a pain in the butt.
And then waiting to try and get everything back. So at least you know where everything was at, right?
True.
So for the fans that haven't, you know, got a chance to check you guys out yet or hear the new album, what would you say they could expect if they get a hold of it?
Well, if you're completely unfamiliar with the band, we're a five-piece progressive death metal band from Vancouver, Canada. We're heavily influenced by bands like some of the earlier works from Opeth, Between the Buried and Me. I'm a huge Converge fan, so we're all pretty into the progier, and I'm more into the hardcore. This new record of ours is considerably more aggressive than our previous works. It comes together a little more cohesively than our previous records, and it's absolutely our strongest release to date. I think it's got a little something for everybody, and I absolutely challenge anybody who listens to it to name what genre we are. It seems like every single review we've had or any person who's listened to the record has had a different idea of what kind of metal we are because we all like so many different kinds and we touch on them in our music pretty often, mostly because we just can't agree on what we want to be, so we just be everything we want to do.
Well, that's a good plan. Keep everybody happy.
It works
right?
Well for us.
Yeah, it works
exactly
out.
Exactly. We're all satisfied by playing our music in a lot of different capacities, so none of us are like pining to start side projects because we can fully express in the way that we would want to through Neck of the Woods.
Yeah, so no micromanaging. Everybody gets to display their art how they like to.
Exactly. There's no like, well, is that really death metal enough? Is that like acoustic guitar tone? Is that really, are you sure? There's none of that. It's all wide open, you know, we're willing to try whatever.
That's great. So for the diehards, how has it been received so far amongst them?
Oof, really well. Yeah, we've been really pleased to see, so many people who already knew our music and kind of were following our band already and liked our previous album called The Passenger that we put out in 2017. The folks who liked that one seem to be ecstatic about this one. And truthfully, we feel the same way. Like we're very proud of this record. It's undeniably the best music that we've written together as a band. And so far, it's received pretty gleaming reviews from the folks who already liked us. So if you haven't heard of us, check us out. Hopefully you fall into the same category of folks who are really juiced on what we're doing and looking forward to seeing us play once the lockdown is lifted.
Yeah, definitely. I know a lot of people are anxious to get back out there, and I'm anxious to get back in the pit and, you know, just be a fan and take it all in.
Same page, man. Not playing shows is a bummer and not seeing shows is a bummer. Both ends, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big pro wrestling fan, it's been like weird trying to watch with no fans in the audience, you know. It just
right,
just half of it's yeah. missing, you know.
Yeah, you kind of lose the energy and the intensity, you know. It's I feel the same way when it comes to live streaming aggressive metal, you know. It's wonderful to watch a live stream performance. I've been tuning into a ton of them and I've been really, really enjoying them, but it just doesn't translate as heavily, you know. It's impactful when you see it live. So I'm really looking forward to getting back out there. All of us are.
Yeah,
we're all planning and rescheduling. So our 2021 is going to be a pretty full-on year of touring, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Great. I mean, it's like a give-and-take relationship, you know. So you
exactly.
you give it on the stage, and then the fans give it back, and there's just that energy there, and it's just not the same. I've watched a couple of the streaming concerts as well, and it's like – it's great, you know, to hear the art and people present it, but then like you're saying, it's just like to not have that other side of it and see the fans responding and getting involved. It's just, hopefully we'll get back there sooner rather than later, you know?
Yeah, it'll come.
like, what's the creative process like for you guys, you know, when you're working on writing a new song?
It's actually it's changed over the years as we've had a handful of members come and go. And the rendition of Neck of the Woods that we're rolling with right now is probably the strongest it's ever been. But generally speaking, for this record, The Annex of Ire, the bulk of it was written by our guitarist, Dave Carr, and our new guitarist, Ron Holloway. So generally speaking, Dave and Ron, they're both like riff writing machines. They'll hang out in the jam space, write some riffs together, and write at home as individuals. Then Dave will usually record them in Reaper or in whatever program he's all about at the time. And we'll kind of put together a little like rough demo of the riffs. And this helps him kind of cut and paste and move some stuff around so that he can arrange a different composition. And this way we can try out a few different compositions before kind of ever bothering to get together. He'll usually program some sampled drums just to like get a really loose groove, send that over to our drummer, Jeremy, who then has the idea of like, okay, this is what our riffs are like. This is kind of what the feel of it is. He'll go to the space and pound it out and hit some drums and kind of find his own unique groove to it and write his own sections and write his own parts in accordance to that. And then again, Dave will go back and revise and we'll cut and paste and move and shift. And sometimes we even merge two songs together. We did that with one of our songs on the new record called Crosshairs Will Shift. That was actually going to be two different songs, but we just decided to smush them together because it worked so well. But it kind of allows us to create compositions a little more fluidly, being able to do most of it from the comfort of from a desk chair at home, you know. And then once we've all got a good idea based on all the pre-production and kind of demoing, we'll get together at the space, having, you know, a decent idea of what we're getting into, and then we'll just riff it out. We'll get in the room together, we'll jam the songs until it feels right. And when you're playing it live, that's when you can really see, like, does this actually work or is this kind of weird? And that's when you kind of put the song back up on the chopping block, see if what you wrote actually makes sense. And then you go in the studio and you record that song.
That's cool. Telling a story, you got to put the chapters together, right?
Yeah, exactly. So by the time the song is, you know, after the guys have gone through a ton of different revisions and spent a bunch of time ironing out the transitions and making sure the song is complete, that's when I get it. And they give me like a digital copy. Obviously, I've heard it in the jam space a ton of times. But I'll get like a copy of the song that I can, you know, press repeat on, and then I'll sit down and start thinking about how the song makes me feel, what kind of tones and inflections it has, and what set of lyrics I have that will fit it. Generally speaking, I'm kind of writing lyrics all the time. And then I just kind of apply them to whatever songs make the most sense. And I'll sit down and write at my desk and, you know, cycle around the city and go for long runs and think about them and write those lyrics, and then get together at the space, do what I do and see if the guys like it. And then the lyrics are done, and then the song is ready to be recorded.
That's great. What a team atmosphere, you know, everybody's getting to do their part.
It works well.
Yeah. I mean, I just hear horror stories with some bands that have been established or whatever, and then, you know, you get too many cooks in the kitchen, or there's one big chef, you know, and this is how they see it, and you're just kind of like a hired gun. It's like, it takes the love out of it. So keep up your guys' routine.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. We're all very lucky to have a group of people who are as committed to, you know, trying to make a go out of being a full-time musician as we can, and having so many people with complementary skill sets and that are good at listening and care about each other. So that's a real treat. It's nice to have a band full of people that are like actually friends. It makes a big difference.
Oh yeah, definitely. So is there any kind of like superstitions that you guys have, anything that you kind of do like before a show, like, oh, I have to do, you know, my shoestrings have to be like, you know, tied a certain way or whatever before. So, and then every time I do that, we have an awesome show, or before you hit the studio, is there anything like that that you guys got going on?
We all have our own little quirks in our own personalities that how we like to handle our shows and our recording processes. I always try and make sure that I don't eat too soon, and that I do at least 100 push-ups before getting on stage every time, because that's like the bare minimum for like, okay, I think my heart's going to be racing enough that I can get out there and hit song one as hard as, you know, the last song in the set. So I'm pretty fixed to that. I am also a huge sucker for the Vega pre-workout energy, so I use that like crazy before hitting the stage. Our guitarist Dave has this terrible habit of always just about to go on stage and be like, ah, I'm going to like, whatever, I'll eat this chicken sandwich, and then he'll be too full and he'll get on stage and be exhausted. So that's kind of his routine, is stuff himself too full too fast right before we play, which is always hilarious to see him be like, oh God, I can't make it through the set.
Yeah, I think that'll change right away if he craps himself during a performance.
Yeah, it's been close. So it's a world of excitement. And then pre-studio is always a world of adventure, man. It's intimidating putting yourself under the microscope. It's a ton of practicing, a ton of rehearsal. And in fact, actually, I think that's probably what made this record come out as such a cohesive piece, is just the amount of pre-production that went into it. Before we went into the studio this time, we knew exactly what our album would sound like. We had everything ironed out, and there's nothing left up to chance or ambiguity, with the exception of, you know, a good handful of Dave's guitar solos, because he does those kind of impromptu, and he does a lot of improvisational playing, which he's very good at. So he kind of leaves solos up to just in the heat of the moment. But the rest of us kind of knew exactly what we were doing, you know?
Cool. Any kind of a particular studio pop that you guys, you know, for lack of a better word, that's a go-to, that is you'll definitely see it if you come into the studio with you guys?
A studio what?
Like a beverage.
Oh, a pop, a beverage. well, let's see. If I'm recording vocals, there will absolutely be a pot of warm tea. There will almost certainly be like this. There's a particular type of cough syrup I like called Ninjum, and it really soothes the throat when you are sore. So I lean into that pretty highly. But I mean, we all like drinking whiskey, and that makes the creative juices flow. So we often have we've got a bottle of some kind of Canadian rye that's hanging out in the studio with us whenever we're recording. Generally speaking, we stick to that.
Great. And then what's the regular practice spot food other than chicken sandwiches?
Ooh, man. Well, Dave is a sucker for his chicken sandwiches. It depends. When we're on the road, I like to challenge myself to have the most utmost healthy meal for the least amount of money. So oftentimes I'll like go to a grocery store and just buy a bag of spinach and just eat handfuls of spinach. So I tend to lean into that. All the guys are kind of all over the place. We bounce around a lot. Like, it's nice to sample the platter, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I'm one of those people that, like, when I travel, I always try and find like a restaurant or something that's just unique to that area. You know, I don't go to the chains or anything like that. I'll try and hit something. Okay, what's specifically for this area? What's the you know, got the buzz here, and what can I get here that I can't get anywhere else? You know, I'm one of those
exactly
guys.
Yeah, I like the mom and pop shop. I'm a sucker for any time we're on tour. I worked for a number of years as a barista, and I really like finding a great cup of coffee from a fancy local shop. That's usually my go-to. And then, of course, Dave hunts down his most, like, artisan chicken sandwich he can find. Always a chicken sandwich, though. And the boys usually find a sports bar to watch hockey in, so...
Hey, if you guys ever come out this way and play like the Grog Shop, I mean, right over there in Coventry on the street where the venue's at, you'll find both. They got
all kinds
of great places there. So hopefully we'll see you out there in the very near future.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when did you get into playing music? Like, how old were you, and when did you discover and know that this was something you wanted to pursue?
This is actually my first band.
Oh, yeah?
All the other guys had played in other bands and had been playing in bands since, like, you know, school jazz band and since they were just young children in elementary school. But this one's actually my first one. So I started this band with Dave 7 years ago now. Dave was playing in another band called Reckoner at the time, and they disbanded as a couple of the members moved away and pursued different career opportunities. And then I was introduced to Dave through a mutual friend who was actually the original singer of his first band, who introduced me and pushed hard for me to learn how to do metal vocals. I've been a metalhead since I was born. I have an older sister who tells me what I like. Well, told me what I like when I was a kid, and I, you know, worship the ground she walks on. So naturally, when she said, you know, you like Slayer and skateboarding, that was immediately what I took to. So I've always been a fan, and I've always imagined being a frontman, just because I always find it so appealing. It seems so fun and magnetic to feed off the energy of a crowd and to just be right up there front and center. But I had no idea how to actually do the thing. So that gentleman I just mentioned taught me how to perform metal vocals and how to do the yelling and screaming without wrecking your voice. And later in the basement of my very small apartment at the time. And then later that same week, I ended up getting introduced to Dave and kind of did a pseudo audition for a very bare bones band that was pretty much just him and a drummer. And they gave me the part, which I thought was kind of fun. So we didn't really have a name. We didn't have any direction. We weren't sure if we were rehashing Dave's old band or starting something new. And then we just ended up writing material and deciding to just start from fresh. So I ended up actually kind of jumping in from being a new guy who's auditioning, never played in a band before, to naming the band and like really taking the reins on the managerial side of things, which was a strong suit of mine as I studied business in university. So this one just kind of came out of nowhere for me, and it stuck. I, at the time prior to diving into playing in a band, I was racing downhill skateboards at a semi-professional level. Like, I was getting paychecks from, you know, getting royalties off of my pro model board. I was apprenticing at a tattoo shop as well. So I had like a pretty straight career path as it was. I was pretty well set to be tattooing and to be making money off of skateboarding for quite a period of time. And then when I started playing in this band, it really just took over. It was instant and obvious to me. It was like, well, this is what I need to do. After we played our first show, it was a pretty well stop and drop everything else and think about how can I make this my full-time thing? Because all I want to do is perform music. This is too fulfilling to pass up.
Yeah, it goes back to that buzz off that live audience, you know? That feeling.
Yeah, exactly, man.
And I feel for you guys, man. It's got to be going through like a withdrawal almost.
Oh, totally, man. Totally. It's, let me tell you, yelling in a soundproof carpeted room by yourself is not nearly as fulfilling as doing it in a venue.
No, not at all. Although they say it's therapeutic, you know, but to release.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, like I said, that ebb and flow or whatever, the with the crowd.
It's certainly better than nothing.
Yep. So who's been some of your inspirations for singing?
Ooh, well, I'm kind of all over the map. Some of my favorite bands include bands like Converge and Misery Signals. These bands are both bands that I've really idolized and looked up to when I was younger, because they're bands that don't hesitate to show vulnerability in their music and in their voices. You know, like they're not always the most pitch perfect sounding voice, but they just clearly wear their heart on a sleeve, and there's so much emotion packed behind everything they say, which I really admire and definitely try to adhere to. So, you know, people like Jacob Bannon or Jesse Zaraska. I think probably one of my favorites of all time is Keith Buckley from Every Time I Die. His lyricism paired with his like very wide range of skill in his voice is absolutely inspiring and motivating for me to learn how to actually sing and how to be a better frontman, which is always exciting. I'd say those are probably my top three.
Okay, great.
Hello, and thanks for listening to today's Boondoggle. And now, for your listening pleasure, Florence Whitingale presents his latest epoch.
So I'm going to get into some of the questions that I usually ask the guests that I have on here. And it's kind of like I look for, you know, I mean, like you were just talking about wearing your heart on your sleeve, out there performing, how they inspired you. Is there a song in particular that you feel has inspired you in life? Like when you were going through like a, it's like a go-to whenever you were going through like some rough times, you always can flip that one on and it helps, you know, flip the switch.
In terms of one song in particular that helps me cope and understand. I would say that I don't really have one in particular. It kind of depends on the mood, the feeling, and the situation. But when it comes to releases that like really helped me identify and understand and kind of let go a little bit, the record You Fail Me and the record Jane Doe by Converge were two that were very eye-opening in the realm of it's okay to be vulnerable, it's okay to be weak, it's okay to be sensitive, it's okay to have difficulty processing emotion. So those records were a couple that really opened my eyes to that. Same thing with Of Malice and the Magnum Heart by Misery Signals. Those were albums that definitely changed my perception of both heavy music and what it means to be a sensible, vulnerable adult male, which I think is often overlooked in a lot of heavy metal. You know, it's a pretty tough guy. It's kind of a little bit more chest-pumping kind of vibes to it, whereas I've always preferred the folks who are, you know, yelling about either a not necessarily a broken heart, but over something that like drastically upsets you, and that's okay. So those are a couple of releases that really ring strong for me. But man, anytime I'm in a glum mood, I always like to throw on the Gypsy Kings or who did the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever? Bee Gees. Bee Gees are always, you can't listen to the Bee Gees and have a shitty day. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly. Like even if
strut when you hear them.
As pissed as you are in your head, your body just has a mind of its own and starts, you know, stopping your foot and whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes the rest
an easy one to be like, well, I feel better now.
Yeah, and like you were saying too about the, you know, the vulnerability today, I'm can totally relate and understand that. I'm 11 years in recovery, and I've noticed for me, like, the most healing, you know, and processing and getting through stuff has been when I finally have just been vulnerable. You know, that was the foundation to rebuild the new person, you know? So
yeah, exactly.
There's so much healing with that. Just willing to just, okay, I can't do this. Let me ask for help or whatever, you know?
Exactly.
So, definitely well, a
congratulations,
good
Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks. So definitely glad you mentioned that. Is there a particular like morning ritual or routine that you have every day?
Okay, well, it's changed as of late. That's for sure. Well, now my morning routine is quite comfortable. In fact, I'm looking at this whole be socially distant and quarantine yourself as kind of a non-consensual vacation. Right now, I live, as I said, in Vancouver, BC, with my really wonderful partner named Anastasia and our tiny little dog named Winston. Usually wake up around 8 o'clock. I'll stretch, practice the short 15-minute or so yoga routine just to stay limber. I spend a little bit of time reading in the mornings, which I find really gets the gears turning. To drink a cup of coffee while I have a good read, and I'll usually, you know, go through banned emails, think about what the social media posting situation is going to be like for the day, and then I usually just kind of decide whether or not my day is going to be focused on exercise or creativity or just straight up taking care of my partner, whether that be cooking or cleaning or doing the things that would make her life easier, because she actually was not laid off. She's still working from home, so I've got a sugar mama to take care of. So it's been very relaxed. It's been a lot of stretching. It's been a lot of reading. It's been a lot of running. It's been a lot of cycling. I've been really comfortable, actually, to be totally transparent and completely candid. It's aside from the crippling anxiety of your band's career being abruptly put on hold, it's actually been really nice.
Yeah, I mean, I love how you brought that up, too, because it's all about perspective. There's a lot of people that aren't doing well with this, but, you know, if you kind of refocus, like you just said, there's, you know, my kids are home with me. You know, I've been trying to be more intentional about our relationship, because when the world was wide open, you know, we're all running around crazy, not taking the time to appreciate the little things we have. And now, you know, that's all where the focus is at.
Absolutely.
So it's been
really easy to kind of forget that self-care.
Yeah, it's been a definitely a good opportunity to reboot and you know, reprioritize. So you mentioned that you'd like to read too. What was the last book you read?
Last book that I finished was At the Mountains of Madness by H.P. Lovecraft, and I'm currently reading Neuromancer by William Gibson. If you're unfamiliar, Neuromancer is a sci-fi novel released in 1983 that it kind of talks about, it's basically the Matrix, if you think about it. It really neat computer hacker kind of idea in the not so distant dystopian future kind of idea. But it's really, really cool. Very, very poetic. And I'm really enjoying it. So I'm a little newer to reading in my adult life. And we were saying a second ago that you kind of learn to adjust. I never really gave myself time to read beforehand because, you know, I'm working, I go from work to like, oh, I want to go ride my bike, and then I have band practice, and then I need to do a new shirt graphic for the band, and I gotta sit down on my day off and book a tour and start working on artwork for the new record and all that kind of stuff. So it's easy for me to push aside things that are simple pleasures like reading, and you kind of forget about how beneficial they are, you know. It really, really gets the gears turning in your mind. But yeah, if you haven't read Neuromancer by William Gibson, I would say check it out.
Oh, cool, definitely. And yeah, I mean, like you're saying, it's just it's easy to, even like with, not, you know, with everything the way it is, like today, I was like, I overstretched myself that I was running around up until, you know, making this phone call. And then, you know, my anxiety started getting all jacked up from that, and it's just like, wait a minute, let's not jump back into that mode, you know. So it's just like, you know, it's all right to say no, you know.
Exactly.
But
yeah, I feel you.
And like you said, the time to you know, sit back and take advantage of like reading and rediscovering like reading books again. I've been doing the same thing. Like, I got all these books here, but most of the time I'm streaming, you know, I'm binging Netflix or something. So
yeah, it's right. Been good, it's easy to do.
Kick back and you know, keep working that creativity and getting that brain exercising.
Yeah. Rediscovering old hobbies.
Yeah, exactly. So, what's one of like the favorite, places that you've ever visited on your travels?
Ooh, favorite tour spots. Well, there's a few for a few different reasons. We, being a Western Canadian band, we're lucky to be right on the West Coast, which gives us access to, you know, all of Washington, Oregon, and California, which is a ton of fun. But as a Canadian band, it's kind of tricky because touring is a lot of long drives with nothing in between. And that leaves her a lot of boredom. But when it comes to Western Canada, I'd say Calgary and Edmonton, if you're familiar with those two cities. I grew up in Calgary, so I always enjoy playing there because it's, you know, my old high school friends will come out, and people that I haven't seen since I was just a kid tend to come and see us play, which is always nice. You know, it's nice to look into the audience and see at the back of the room, your mom is there wearing your t-shirt. She's like, I love you. You're like, oh, thanks, mom. That's always a nice one. I love that. But I'd say probably my favorite place that we've played so far was a bit of an oddball in Chico, California. A really awesome dude named Jake Hollingsworth threw us a show in a sandwich shop called Ike's Sandwiches.
Awesome.
I'm not sure if you're familiar at all with Chico, but Chico, California is any Hollywood movie that you've ever seen that illustrates and portrays like a frat town, college, university town of like all of the frat houses, and there's, you know, red Solo cups all over the lawns, and everything's been covered in toilet paper, and there's like a passed out guy in a kiddie pool on the front lawn kind of idea of it just being this insane party town. Chico is exactly like that. There's like, it's almost as if like the movie Old School is taken note for note from Chico, California.
Frank the Tank's, it's running hilarious. Down the street.
Exactly, man. Exactly. So we played in this sandwich shop, assuming that like this was just, you know, a Wednesday evening that we were just filling of like, well, we have to make our way back up and our next show is like our next bigger show is in Portland and that's not going to be for a couple of days. So let's just go play, you know, a small all ages show and see how it goes. And we've only played there once, but it was insane. Like people, so many kids showed up. It was packed. It was completely unexpected. We played in a sandwich shop who paid us in sandwiches, which was awesome. And we met a ton of really interesting people in a really beautiful part of California that was completely unknown to us. It was a total sleeper. So I absolutely love playing in Chico, California, and I can't wait to go back.
And who wouldn't want to go see a band rip up a, you know, sandwich shop, you know?
Yeah.
Word of mouth alone, like, no way. No, there, what? And then everybody's like, I'm going just to see this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're playing like on the floor with all the lights on while people are still ordering sandwiches, you know, and you look into the crowd and half of them are eating like a Dutch Crunch ham sandwich. Like, this rules. This is too good.
Yeah. It sounds like a good time. So who's one of your favorite, bands that you've had like the most fun with on the road?
Oof, man, we haven't really toured with too many other bands. Most of our tours that we've done, again, as I mentioned, like being a DIY band, I booked most of the tours myself. We've only just now started working with a booking agent. And booking agents, generally speaking, kind of have the keys to opening up the world of touring with larger bands. We've done a handful of dates with other bands in our scene. There's another band called The Hollowed Catharsis that we've done a few runs to, you know, places within our region. We did a tour with another Canadian band that's completely out of our league. They're called Striker. If you're unfamiliar with Striker, they're like a very awesome, super catchy, modern kind of Iron Maiden feel, and they're wicked. They're super fun guys, but we are on complete opposite spectrums of metal. So doing a run with them was probably one of the most fun. We did a handful of shows in the west coast of the state with those guys, and it was hilarious. They're a lot of, like, you know, battle vest wearing with big white, you know, high top shoes and painted on black jeans and huge teased up hair. And it was like super thrash metal. And we're all, you know, just pretty like black shirt and t-shirt kind of regular ass dudes. So it was a lot of fun. It was really cool touring with those guys because they had a great positive attitude, had a really wild set every night. We did one very small run with, the band that I've mentioned that has so heavily influenced me called Misery Signals. And we've got a tour with them that we were actually supposed to be leaving for today. We're supposed to be on the road with them as of today, but that tour got moved to November. So I feel like I'll be able to more thoroughly answer your question at the end of November once we've done another run, because a lot of our stuff has been solo. Oh, actually, I suppose that's not true. We did one run with one of my favorite West Coast bands ever that every listener out there should absolutely take the time to check out, and that's the band Pound. If you're unfamiliar with the band Pound, they're a two-piece math grind band that's all instrumental, that is unlike any other band you've ever heard. You cannot watch Pound and not be absolutely blown away by the raw power that this two-piece has. They're two of the nicest guys I've ever met. Their guitarist, Ryan Schutte, he's kind of like my number one dude when it comes to bouncing ideas around and saying, like, does this tour routing make sense? Or do you have any contacts in Arkansas? Like, where should we play in Utah? He always knows exactly what's up, has great ideas, and is just the most positive dude. So touring with Pound has been the number one for sure.
Cool. I have to check them out too then.
Yeah, they're really wild.
So what would you want your legacy to be? How would you like to be remembered?
Oof, that's a lofty one. Personally or as the band?
Personally. I like, man, to get in usually, you know, when I have people listening, I'm hoping that, you know, they get to, you know, peer behind the curtain a little bit and at the,
yeah,
place,
yeah,
you know,
of course,
and
of course.
So,
well, that's the goal. My personal legacy, man, that's a heavy question. I don't know that I'd want to like project a personal legacy that I get to choose. You know, I'm kind of interested to see. I guess I'll never actually see, you know. Once I'm gone, then people's own perceptions will will kind of fill the air. I don't know. I would say to touch on what we were talking about earlier, to, you know, be remembered by the willingness to be emotionally vulnerable, to see problems with both yourself and with others, and to approach them in a diplomatic and comfortable way, and accepting vulnerability, and knowing that that's A-okay. I would like to be remembered as a reminder that it's all right, and that you're human, and that life is hard for every single person, and it doesn't get easier for anybody. So empathy and compassion are super important things. It would be nice if Amen. My life was a reminder of that to other people.
Great. Great. Yeah. Be a living example. When we stuff things and we try and ignore them, these things find a way to manifest in our health, or, you know, other ways, you know, in our bodies and stuff. That's why just being vulnerable and releasing, man, is the beginning of healing, for real healing. So,
I wholeheartedly agree.
I definitely got a lot of respect for you for that. And if that's the message we can get out there, then I hope that's what people get out of this.
I hope so too.
Now, here's another question I like to ask, which kind of goes back to, I guess, being vulnerable back in the days, you know, when we were kids. But what was your favorite toy as a child and why?
Ooh, man. Let's see. There was a few. So as a kid, I was, like, absolutely obsessed with Batman. I thought Batman was the coolest thing, and I had a pretty wicked collection of Batman action figures that I had collected through garage sales all throughout my neighborhood. And I really respected those toys. I'm pretty sure my parents still have them in the basement. They were toys that I coveted. You know, I wasn't the kid who was blowing them up with little bottle rockets and stuff like that. Not that we can get those. We live in Canada. We don't even have bottle rockets here. I absolutely coveted and loved my Batman. I think it just kind of gave me a sense of power when you're holding your tiny little action figure. It kind of makes you feel like you can be a superhero too, which was really nice. I really loved that. And then I started skateboarding when I was 5.
Oh, wow.
So when I started skateboarding, that kind of took over my life. Like, I was really into team sports at the time. Like, you know, like every kid, I played soccer and t-ball, and I played hockey because I'm Canadian, and that's just, you're forced into it as a kid.
That's a problem.
Yeah, exactly, man. It's like it comes in the mail with like a sample of Tide. You're just like expected to play hockey as a young kid. So I played hockey a little bit and enjoyed it as I was just a tiny little guy. And then I started skateboarding when I was 5. So like, probably my first couple boards that I got at garage sales that, you know, I never really broke. I just kind of physically outgrew because I got pretty big pretty quick. Those were my number one. And they were my number one because, unlike team sports and unlike Batman, I found skateboarding gave me a lot of time to spend with myself. And being a very social person, you know, there's a pretty big social dynamic around skateboarding. A lot of times you're skating with other people and you're, you know, hanging out in a crew, or you're at the skate park or whatever, something like that. But I liked it because I did it by myself and I did it for myself. It was something that I didn't rely on other people in order for it to be gratifying and fulfilling. So I stuck to it and I ended up, you know, I'm turning 30 here in a couple of weeks and I'm still skateboarding often. So I'd say the number one would be the old wheelie board.
Great. So, you know, you were mentioning growing up in Calgary and stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, like I was mentioning earlier, I'm a big pro wrestling fan. So every time I hear mm-hmm. something, you know, I know certain cities by, like, if somebody mentions a city, I'm like, oh, that's where, you know, Big Boss Man's from. So Calgary, I'm like, all right, the Hart Foundation right away.
Say the threat to Hitman Hart.
Yep. And so yeah. One of the questions I ask, and, you know, a lot of times people aren't fans, but everybody seems to know somebody that they liked at one point from when the wrestling was like really huge. So who would you say your favorite wrestler is?
I liked Rey Mysterio. I always thought he was super cool. I thought it was really rad. I liked the look of the luchador mask. You know, I'm like a suburban white Canadian, and There's like not a big Mexican population up here at all. And I was like, that's the coolest thing in the world. It's so different. It's so international and rad. And I thought that Rey Mysterio was the sweetest. He also had a couple moves that I'd, like the Batista bomb or something like that. I'm not sure what it was, but just wicked. I thought he was the coolest. But then also, you know, Bret the Hitman Hart, because like his Bret the Hitman's Hart family lived kind of close to mine. And one of their relatives went to school with me. So like I knew these people, but like only just kind of via proxy, you know?
Yeah.
One of the 5 degrees or 6 degrees or something of separation. And they were really cool. And they were really active in our communities too. Same thing with our minor league hockey team, which was the Hitmen. They were kind of tied together, and there was like, you know, lots of smaller tier stuff. It wasn't always major wrestling matches, but you could go and you could see Bret Hitman Hart at like, you know, the local mall just opened. So Hitman Hart's cutting a ribbon kind of idea. So I got a chance. I had met that guy a couple times. So
that's great.
Probably number one.
So they give back a lot to the community, or they did for years. I would read about the Calgary Stampede shows and stuff like that.
Oh, they were wicked. Yeah, I remember seeing the Calgary Stampede wrestling, and they were always rock solid.
Great.
But current favorite wrestler, I'd say, is Kenny Lush.
Kenny Lush?
Do you know who Kenny Lush is?
No, I don't. I have to look him up.
Yeah, please do. Kenny Lush is, I don't think he's pro right now. He's an AM wrestler here in Vancouver. He's also the guitarist for the pop punk band Daggermouth, and is a really, really cool guy. I'm sure, like, being into heavy metal, into pro wrestling, you're probably familiar with, like, Andy Williams from Every Time I Die.
Yeah, I was just about to mention him.
Yeah. So he's a really cool guy and is a really cool wrestler to watch. But Kenny Lush is built very similarly to Andy, where in which he's, like, kind of an orange on a toothpick. Like, he's just the most top-heavy, no-leg person that you've ever seen. You're like, man, how do you shop? How do you clothe yourself? This is weird. He's a really strange dude, but he's also oftentimes a security guard and a bouncer at the metal venues here in town. So anytime you see a show, there's this like juggernaut of a man who's, oh, hi guys. And he's like so soft spoken and so sweet, but he's absolutely pummeling in the ring. So I really, really respect and admire Kenny Lush for his tenacity and excellent wrestling career. So check him out if you don't know him.
Yeah, so I got to check out Pound, and I got to check out Kenny Lush. So
exactly.
Note to self, I'll be on that. Well, get ready to wrap up here. Where would you like to, for fans that have, you know, not followed you guys, aren't familiar with you, and I know right now, you know, I'm sure, you know, you could use people to purchase some music and stuff like that to help out during this downtime. Where would you send them to be able to do all that?
You can check out any of our social media. I use Instagram a lot just because it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. So check out our Instagram. Probably me posting. If you shoot the band a message, probably me answering. So please don't ever hesitate to get in touch, whether or not you got a question for the band or you just want to chat and hang out because you got nothing going on. I'm always down to entertain it. It really helps when people, you know, buying merch and stuff like that is really, really helpful, but it helps just as much if you just follow us on Spotify and like tell your friend about it. Like, yeah, well, I heard this sick metal band from Canada. Check them out. That's as helpful as buying t-shirts. So I would absolutely love it if people bought shirts, because that just means that, you know, none of us have to personally go into financial debt in order to move forward with the band. But again, just the thought of you listening to our music is heartwarming, and that's fantastic. We don't expect ever anybody to have any kind of monetary supplementation for us. Just give it a spin. Give it a listen. We hope you like it as much as we do.
Great. And then one last favor before we sign off here. Would you mind cutting a promo ID for the radio show?
Yeah, of course.
You just, you know, introduce yourself, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Boondoggle. I like it. That's awesome. Cool, man. Well, hey, this is Jeff Radomski from Neck of the Woods, and you're listening to Boondoggle.
Awesome.
How's that? Okay?
Yeah, that was good. Well, it's called Today's Boondoggle. You want to do one more time?
Oh, goddammit. Yeah, no worries. Of course. Hey, this is Jeff Radomski from Neck of the Woods, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, indeed.
And great talking with you. And hopefully you guys will make it out to the Cleveland area. And I would recommend trying to get out to the grog shop because, like I said, there's a good coffee, mom-and-pop coffee place down the street, and as well as some good chicken sandwiches. So,
okay, right on. That's exactly what we need. And I'm almost certain that we'll end up there in the next year. We're currently booking a couple tours, assuming the world is not on fire. But we're currently working our way towards that area in the next year. So we'll be out there.
All right. Sounds good, man. Thanks again.
It's been a treat. See you later.
All right. Bye.
brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Was a mosquito trip when we went down to Nimitz. We redo the tents because ours was fucked up.
Yeah.
The commander of the 9th Fleet flying over in his helicopter, and
everybody had to move.
The tents are like, you know,
they had to be moved like 2 feet.
And here's our tent.
They had to move because they were all in line.
No, I take it back. It was more like that.
Yeah, right.
Because we weren't gonna stay in it anyway. And he's flying over. Who's that?
That's kind of fun.
Your people got to change
Remember that time, sir? Look at that.
Yeah, right.
We'd have been great if they followed our van to the Conquistador.
We never put a ton up before in our lives.
Tim, remember that when we were in Puerto Rico and we had to start tearing the tents down? And that chief comes up to me and goes, hey, if I don't get some help from you guys or get some bodies, I'm going to have you guys do it. Remember that? What was that one guy's name that was Al's buddy? And he sucked his way into where he didn't have to do nothing on the island. He stayed in a conics box the whole time.
We're just showing up to get checked in and we're out of here.
He comes up and he's got all this potato chips and pop for us. He goes, hey, man, I got you guys some. And we were pissed at him anyway. And I go, hey, guess what?
Your tech's off.
You're going to go and you're going to start helping tear these damn tents down. He goes, wait a minute, man. He said, I just bought you all this potato chips and pop. I said, yeah, thanks.
It sounds like me, but you were pointing at me.
You know, no.
I've never put one up. And they're like, you're in charge of this. I've never done this in my life.
It looks good until you look from a helicopter.
No, it looks good, but you're not fucking doing it.
Everything's askew.
They had a bunch of little E2s, E3s, fucking putting this thing up, and we've never done it.
We're trying to figure out how to put it up.
Like, what the fuck? We're like, we did it. The thing's like...
It was before cell phones and YouTube, so we had nothing to follow, yeah?
I remember when we finally moved into Tent City, and the FIPCB commander was just a complete dick. And for some reason, he had a serious heart on him. So he was assigning duties. He was a lieutenant commander. And he was going through his roster, and he looks at me, and he points his finger, and says, and you are doing the mid-watch on blah, 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 blah. Okay, so I was in the radio room sitting around with three guys, nothing happening. You know, it's like, this doesn't suck. Okay, got it. And the CO, or the Commodore, came in and started giving me shit again. And I explained my situation to him. He was like, okay, that doesn't sound so horrible. That's not the story I heard. We'll make it right. Somebody will get back with you. We'll make it right for you. Great, sir. I'm just taking care of my dudes, man. That's all I'm doing. Taking care of my crew. And if we can do that...
We're all here serving time.
Yeah. But then he wanted to reactivate me and court-martial me.
Court-martial, yeah.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.